This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
With a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. I am Patsy with a Z, and I am the last of the red hot book lovers because I love books and I love to talk to authors. And right now I'm going to be talking to, well, I hope he's real, PJ Goldust. Oh my goodness, I'm sorry. It's Susan. Well, you are real. I know you're real. I know, Susan Godwin. I'm so happy to welcome you because PJ's going to be after you. But, I know that you're real. And PJ is writing a book about AI, which is sort of frightening to me. But how are you, Susan?
Patsy, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you now.
Excellent. I'm well. How are you?
Okay, fine.
Are you doing all right?
Yes, well, I love this book, Rain Dodging.
Yes.
When I first got it, I thought, what does that mean?
Good.
I loved it. And it is so wonderful.
Thank you.
I get so thrilled when an author just, something sparks their imagination. And that certainly happened with you and this book.
Yeah. I mean, you just saying that made me kind of choke up a little bit. Uh-oh. I'm in trouble. But yeah, I was researching. I was lucky enough. Do you want to hear about my
story? Oh, yeah. This is what I love.
Okay. I was lucky enough to study for a summer at Oxford through the Breadloaf School of English, where I was enrolled up in Middlebury College. I was in Oxford. I was doing a paper, and I stumbled across a lesser-known queen, Mary of Modena. She was the queen consort to James II, and she had a court of female writers back in the 17th century, which was unheard of. And I just, that ding went off in my head. I had to know how that happened.
Well, what is exciting about it? Just knowing that you discovered this queen, that really, as you say, people really don't know much about her. And,
no.
Of course, the Stuarts aren't as famous as the Tudors.
Right.
So people were not aware of her. And tell us about her and how she came to England, because
oh my gosh,
she definitely wasn't British.
No, she was an Italian princess. Near Milan, northern Italy, and she was basically brokered off to then the Duke of York. She was married by proxy and carried through France, over the Alps, across the English Channel, to meet a man 25 years her senior, and it was traumatic for her, to say the least. But she grew to love her husband, and as I said, she I wondered if she had created the court, or if the court was created for her.
Well, so this is part of the story. This is
right.
This is a fascinating part of the story. Well, I love, of course, when you said Oxford, it gives me a thrill. I love Oxford. I never attended. But I lived nearby, so I've spent a lot of time in Oxford. I lived in Sonning near Henley.
Okay. I was very lucky. And then to return 6 years later, to be able to return on a fellowship. So I would love to get back there. I mean, I just feel so attached to England for some reason.
Oh, it there's something that happens to you when you get to England that just I loved it. It was my dream when I was 11 years old. I told my family I'm moving to England. I mean, I'm from Northern Michigan. They didn't even, you know,
really? Where are you from? I have to ask you. My dad is from Traverse City. That's why I asked.
Okay, well, I'm from Berga. So
by
Houghton Hancock area.
Okay, okay.
So,
yeah.
Yeah.
So pretty up there, man.
Oh, it is. It is. And we get a lot of time. In those days, it was lucky we didn't have devices. You know, we didn't have all those things.
Oh, don't get me started. I am just so thankful that I didn't have to raise my daughter during this time. I'm such a pushover. I don't think I would have survived.
it's so terrible because we grew up having an imagination.
Right. Go outside and come back when it's dinner time, right?
that was our day. I tell people that and they say, oh, really? And
it's so sad. You know, this is kind of macabre, but there's this big green grasshopper that suddenly appeared on my floor this morning, and it reminded me of those days looking for praying mantis in the field across the street.
Well, it does something to your soul to be raised that way, I think.
Yeah.
So there you are in Oxford, just the joy of being in Oxford. It's just all the vibrations. I used to get so thrilled just to go there, you know, to sit in a cafe, a restaurant, and listen
people
to everybody talking.
Yeah, people watch, and the cobblestones, and the street vendors, and
and then of course the best thing of all, libraries. Library.
Well, the Bodleian.
Yeah.
I mean, this is cliche, but it's true. It does not get better than the Bodleian.
No.
And I was so lucky to do my research there.
Well, obviously, lucky and talented, because they don't let just anybody.
Right. Well, and I did. I felt so entitled, and I loved every minute of it.
So let's get back a little bit to this story, because I love the idea of this court filled with women writers.
Yes.
So tell us how did she? Well, not we'll leave part of it as a mystery, but tell us about how did those women feel having this opportunity?
Well, Mary was loved, well loved. She was gentle, she was bright, and of course she supported women and their writing, and music too. Well, all of the arts, actually. So, I don't know what more to say about that without giving.
We don't want to give anything away, because it is.
If you want to know what happens, read the book. Do you remember that?
Yeah, it's really true. In this case, you know, sometimes you can talk about a book and it doesn't ruin it, but in this case, it is so. It's just so. I got such a kick out of it, and you know.
Thank you.
And of course. With telling people 17th century, you know, that means 1600 something. Just to,
right.
Now,
right.
Nowadays, you have to sort of tell people a little bit, and then where did she live mostly?
When Mary first got there, they lived in St. James Palace. And then eventually, well, they lived at Windsor. They even had to go north to Scotland to Holyrood Palace when the religious anti-Catholic fervor was too strong. James and his brother Charles II were Catholic, although Charles didn't admit it till his deathbed. But I digress. But that's part of the fun of this. There's just so much intrigue and mystery to the court and court culture.
Oh, and of course, you had the opportunity to go to these places. And
yes, it was important to me to get a sense of space. I taught, Patsy, middle school English for almost 20 years at a wonderful private school in Nashville. And I tried not only to instill a love of writing in my students, but to stress how important sense of place was in creating their world.
And oh, to be in England, it was just so, I had quite a few years there, and it was just such a joy for me to live there. In those days, of course, the theater was incredible. Wow.
Did you go into London often then?
Yes, I did. I did. I think I saw every show.
Oh. And Stratford, of course,
yeah,
right?
Yes. We had so much fun.
I saw Patrick Stewart in Julius Caesar in Stratford.
Oh.
And that, you know, I mean, that's really nice, isn't it?
Oh, it is. You know, just, I mean, you never find
any name drop.
Yeah, no, you just don't have anything like that. There's the intimacy of the theater there.
Yeah, that was such a surprise to me how small the theater was.
Yeah, it does surprise people, and I you know, being a resident of England, I get all sorts of relatives from the States coming, and I'd have to, you know, I'd take them to these places, so I'd go off and, you know, and I just, I got such a kick out of it. I got such
That's
a kick.
That's so funny, because when I grew up in Cleveland, Ohio, and then I returned there after college, and nobody visited me there, but when I lived in L.A., I even had visitors who didn't leave.
Well, you know, it's just, I, as I was reading the book, I was thinking, I was sort of jealous, like, oh, she got to go. Yeah. But it is fun when something like that happens. I think one of the joys of writing is, first of all, it occupies your mind in such wonderful ways. But when you get to do research, I think that is really, that's sort of that's the cherry on the sundae, because I love the research part.
Well, you go down a rabbit hole, don't you?
Yeah.
And you don't know where it's going to take you. And you just keep following one path, and then you back up maybe and follow another path. And it's the hunt.
Exactly. So what surprised you the most about the 17th century? There was a 17th century.
Well, you know, this is no surprise, but since I talk about feminism and early women's feminism in the book, I never liked to label myself anything, let alone a feminist, but the more I read about the way women had rights is just even a silly word. They were property. The more angry I became, and the more I wanted to know more about how we got to, for instance, the second wave of feminism with Gloria Steinem and so forth. You know, what was that progression? Because it took a really long time.
Well, and I think now, I don't know, if we look back on it, there are some things about that period, too, that are rather shocking in a way that, in some ways, did a little bit of reverse, making women, again, objects in many ways.
Interesting. And, you know, my younger readers, and by younger, I mean 30, 40, I want to teach them about that. And, that's part of my quest in this book.
Well, I think you've done it. It's just, it's a great read.
Thank you.
That's that. You capture the flavor of England.
Oh, thank you. That means a lot to me. Thank you very much.
So on the sort of fashion and food side of it, what did you discover that was interesting?
I'm laughing because I'm thinking about how I discovered the history of the brassiere. Don't ask me now because my recall is terrible. But it is in the book, and there might be an extensive note on that in the notes section, which is pretty extensive.
Yeah, I thought that was great. I thought that was good. Yes, definitely.
I have not worn one for years, by the way.
Well,
life is too short.
But I love. Well, again, you discover that in your research. You know, you're not looking for that, but it just comes up.
Exactly. And like we said, that's the beauty of going down those holes and just going where it takes you, especially if you have the time. And I really have the time to do it. And I didn't put any constraint on where I was going with this at all.
Well, I could tell as I'm reading, I was feeling very jealous. She's having so much fun here. She's just captured. It's always fun to find something that most people don't know about. It's enough that most people don't know anything about the Stuarts. But definitely, when you find some one person who can sort of grab your heart and mind.
When you are an English major, you are expected to come up with your own themes. That was something really new to me. I went back to school in my 40s to get a double major and in English. And, you know, when that was first, I'll say presented, but it felt like it was thrown in my face, I almost didn't know what to do. But then I grew to really adore the creativity and the freedom that presented. And I also learned, if any researchers out there, younger researchers, if you keep your focus narrow, the more narrow, the easier it is to, to find what you're looking for. Which sounds like a contradiction in terms, but it's true.
But it is. It actually is. I know the feeling.
I learned it the hard way.
Yeah. Oh boy. I've been working on a historical novel for years.
It's, yeah. What is it about?
Oh, it's about 1875, and in India.
Okay.
And it's so much fun, and I'm having so much fun. And the main character, I mean, he drives me crazy. I mean, sometimes at like 5 a.m, I know he's sitting in the corner chair looking at me and saying, "Why don't you spend some time with me, dear?"
Now, isn't that right about the time Gandhi was born?
He was born about there. Yeah, but it's a fascinating story. I've gone down talking about following a rabbit hole. I followed the sewers. I don't think there's any person in the world today who could draw the sewers of Baroda in northern
goodness.
India. I know those sewers.
You were there. You were there.
Oh, yes, I'm like, oh boy.
Oh my God.
You know, so of course you had fun going around England and that's
no sewers.
No sewers. Oh wow. Oh, that I think it's a wonderful book, and I hope that people will get it. It's called Rain Dodging, and you have to read it to find out why it has that title.
Thank you, Patsy, so much.
Well, I'm sure you're working on something else right now.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, right now I'm working on my book launch party for next month, but I do have a young adult novel, and at one point I would say it was completed, but now I need to go back into it and really, now that I know more about the publishing process and just some things I want to do differently, I'll go back into that book and see what happens.
And is it historical or modern?
No, it's contemporary.
Contemporary. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, make sure you let me know when it's released, and you'll be back here.
Thank you. Yeah, fingers crossed, and staying healthy and all that.
Yeah, well, you know, you're a talent, obviously. Your writing is, I think that one of the things when I always say when a writer, it makes me happy, I call the writer solid. That means I know that you're going to give me everything I need. I don't have to worry. I don't have to worry about your grammar, which is nice because, you know, I made a mistake of introducing you as I have another author coming on, and they're talking about AI, and I just, it's driving me crazy. I'm getting books now that I think are written by something. You're a real person. You wrote this book.
Yes, I wrote this book.
I think your personality shines through it.
Thank you.
Okay, so you have a book launch coming up?
Yeah, I'm in November 13th here in Nashville.
Okay. Well, my son went to Vanderbilt, so we love
Nashville. I'm right across the street from there.
Okay. Well, we love Nashville, and it's a wonderful thing. And, of course, I hope that you'll have lots of opportunities to promote this book.
Thank you.
And it's just one of the wonderful things people, I like to tell people is that if you take a book about a period that you don't know anything about, I mean, most people don't know anything about 17th century, and it take them a minute to figure out over the years. But it's so much fun to go back in time.
Yeah.
You really feel like a time traveler. When a book is really good, it takes you back to that time, and you feel like you're in that time.
Well, you know, if I can tell you, years and years ago, there was a short little feature on me, an interview in the national newspaper, and he made a mistake and said that I was concentrating on the 17th century, which I wasn't doing at the time, but then I ended up doing it.
you never know where you're going to go. Well,
kind of like the Twilight Zone in a way.
Okay.
It was so prophetic without meaning to be.
Well, it's been a joy to talk to you, and your website is Susan J. Godwin.
Yes.
Okay, so people can find you there, and of course, the book is available online. Get this book, and you will be transported back in time and discover. Nobody expects to find out the history of the brassiere. So fantastic! Again, thank you so much for joining
me
today.
Thank you. Good luck to you. Bye.
Okay. Bye-bye. Bye now. All right. I love this book. I love history. Oh, I love Oxford. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. I spend days and days walking around Oxford. Okay, we're going to have a literary gem from Jim Lamb and then some commercials, and then I will be back with, I hope, a real writer.
Here's a headline. Hyperboles are the best, greatest, most wonderful, super-duper way to get a reader's attention. Short version, extravagant exaggeration stretches the truth to the breaking point, sometimes beyond. That's hyperbole, all right. Use it with deliberate purpose and obvious intent for emphasis, dramatic effect, or humor. I'm Jim Lamb. Let's get started. Years ago, when my son was young, he asked, "Dad, what does the word hyperbole mean?" I stopped what I was doing, turned to him and yelled, "If I've told you once, I've told you a million times, don't bother me when I'm writing." He looked at me stunned, jaw dropped, eyes wide open. Then I smiled and said, "That, my boy, is hyperbole." Here's an example from the opening of Babe the Blue Ox. One winter, it was so cold that all the geese flew backward and all the fish moved south. And even the snow turned blue. Late at night, it got so frigid that all spoken words froze solid before they could be heard. People had to wait until sunup to find out what folks were talking about the night before. I love that. Especially the part about the fish moving south. Why? Because I live in Florida and I like to fish. Hey fish, come on down! Shakespeare knew how to use hyperbole better than most. Here's a sample from Macbeth. All great Neptune's ocean washes blood clean from my hand. Wow, that's a lot of blood. A ton, a bunch, oodles, and even more water. Splish splash. How about you? Have you heard these hyperboles? I'm so hungry I could eat a horse. I have a ton of homework. My sister has a million pair of shoes. I'm starving to death. He's older than dirt. She's got gobs of money. His brain is the size of a peanut. Her eyes are wide as saucers. You missed it by a mile. I can't do anything right. He's as dumb as a bag of rocks. She looks like $1 million. It's been ages since I've seen you. I can smell pizza a mile away. My dad knows everything about cars. She has a heart of gold. My mom's gonna kill me. These phrases grab attention. Create an amusing effect, make a point. That's what hyperboles do. No surprise, then, that they show up in advertising. When I was a kid, there was a brand of gasoline to put a tiger in your tank. There was another tiger that pitched Frosted Flakes by saying, "They're great." Want more? Of course you do. On TV, there's a fluffy pink bunny that sells a battery brand that keeps going and going and going. An insurance company whose service is so easy a caveman can do it. A theme park that's the happiest place on earth. An energy drink that gives you wings. Excuse me. Hello, Southwest. Cancel my flight. I'm going to fly to Orlando myself and get happy. Speaking of getting happy, we've got to wrap this up. Why? Because I have a million things to do. A bottomless pit of things. So many, they could choke a horse. I'm Jim Lamb, and you've just learned a little something about hyperboles.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Have you ever faced disaster? The Red Cross is always there for you. The Red Cross responds to a call for help every 8 seconds. They have never turned anyone down. Now they need your financial support so that they can be ready to help you when the need arises. Donate online at redcross.org. Thank you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z, and I am back with my next guest. P.J. Caldas, an Emmy Award-winning author, I hope. I know he won Emmy, but I hope he's a real person. Hi, P.J. Yes.
How are you?
Okay. Now tell me, am I supposed to call you P.J.?
Yeah, PJ's fine. I don't even remember what it stands for anymore.
I love it. It's a good name. Now I hope that you are a handsome Brazilian.
I am Brazilian. The handsome parts I can't.
Oh, I think you are. If this is a real picture and it's not an AI thing, because the name of your book is The Girl from Wudang.
Exactly.
A novel about artificial intelligence, martial arts, and immortality. Now that's a combination.
Yeah, it was supposed to be two different books originally. Like 8 years ago, when I started to write, I was kind of writing two different stories, and then suddenly I realized that it was they're just one thing, and they're way more interesting when I combine them. And I've never seen those subjects kind of being merged together. So like I think it can turn out pretty good, and I think it did.
Okay, well now you've proven at least that you have a lovely Brazilian accent. I could listen to you all day. Now, we're going to talk about this girl. Okay. What does it mean? Why do we have AI involved here?
So, the story, my motivation to write this, was mostly on the martial arts side. You know, I practiced martial arts since I was 10 years old. I just turned 50, so I don't remember not practicing something, and I'll try to fight, not being in the middle of a fight of some sort. And I started to write because of that. I wanted to help readers understand the thing that happens is just a vanity that happens when you're fighting, and the motivation to put yourself in danger and get hurt but enjoy it and go back the next day. So that's how I started to write this. But then I wanted to put that against the opposite of it. And what was the opposite? The most contrasting situation for me would be to take someone from the mountains of China, the sacred mountains of China, someone who grew up under the Taoism rule and being educated under Taoist philosophies and learning Tai Chi and learning Kung Fu, and then being thrown straight into, at the same time, cage fights in California and the crazy lab techs in the Bay Area as well. And what happens? Well, how could a woman that comes from these sacred mountains of Kung Fu react to this world? That I live in California, I lived in the Bay Area for 15 years, so I kind of know that well. And so I kind of put all my worlds collapsing. I got them all together and thought, let's see what happens. Let's shake them all up together and it turned out into a story.
Yeah. It definitely turned into a story. Now, the girl, her name is Yin Yin, right?
Yeah.
But
yeah,
she's called Tigress.
Yes, and in the story she's called Tigress because she's super violent. You know, she's super fierce, and her training partners do not like it, and they are very annoyed that a woman is beating them up. So they call them Tigress as just to bully her, and she actually enjoys it and owns it. It's like, you know what? I am a tigress. That's it. I remember kind of when I was in China kind of doing research and everything, and so I mentioned that to some of the locals, but I think I'm gonna call her Tigress, and they would look at me, no, don't do it, it's bad. You know, that's when you say when you don't like a woman. Like, okay, that's exactly how it's gonna be. They're gonna say that because they don't like her, and she's going to enjoy it because she's a beast, and she sees herself as that, and she takes pride in it.
I liked it. I thought it was the perfect name. Now, I was a kickboxer.
For
many years before it really became popular, and so I know that feeling. Now, and I loved it.
It's incredible to be in a fight, but I think it's even more incredible when you get in front of someone and they know that you fight, and they take a half step back.
Exactly. I thought so. I love that. I thought that was really, really great. Now, on the subject of artificial intelligence.
Yeah.
Oh boy, what do you think? Where is it going? Where does it go in this book?
In the book, the story that in the book, what happens is that she's invited to participate in an experiment, scientific experiment that they want. The scientists want someone that is very different from them, and she couldn't be more different than from them than anyone else on the planet. So they pick her because she was raised without any idea of how technology can change our lives. She's raised in the mountains and everything, so she's picked for that, and her reaction to the developments in artificial intelligence, in nanotechnology, in brain implants, all technologies are happening right now. They're quickly evolving as we speak, start to shock her and cause her a lot of annoyance and awe. But I think at the end of the day, the story started to, as a martial arts story, contrasted with the technology world that I was kind of, when I started to research that 8 years ago, it was far away. Well, I thought we were like 20 to 30 years. But then when the book launches now, it's launching today. And you know, this is the topic. Those are the topics, the brain implants and the artificial intelligence. They're the topic of the moment. And the reason why they are so important is because we know that that's going to change everything, but we don't know exactly how. And it's like we are in the beginning of a big evolution moment, and we know that accidents are going to happen, that crazy things, unpredictable things are going to happen. Some of them are going to be good, some of them are not going to be so good, but things are going to be different, and it's going to change, and it's going to be completely transformed the next 10 years. I think the story doesn't tell you how it's going to be, but it tells you what we are getting ourselves into in the next few years, and at least how we need to think, how should we be looking at this and trying to understand the world that is, and the transformation of the world around us.
Well, it's a fascinating look at AI, because I think most people they don't really understand it, and as I was sort of joking that I'm glad that you're not an AI. I hope you're not AI. I hope you're real. You sound real.
Me too.
I'm sure AI can pretend to be a sexy Brazilian, but it looks like you're doing okay for yourself. So that's definitely one of the things that I think makes the story one that I think a lot of people would like to read.
Now, thank you very much. I mean, one of the you know, you're a martial artist yourself, so I think you can you understand that part. I think it's the most intriguing element of all this for me, and it's something that I realized later, not in the beginning of the story, that is, when you're fighting, you have to let go of all your thoughts and all your intentions, right? And if you go to the mountains of China, they're going to train you into letting go, into letting the universe play its role and let go of your objectives and everything. When you think of AI is a new kind of technology that, instead of programming a computer to do something, it teaches a computer to learn, to achieve a goal, to go after something. So they are literally opposite ways of thinking. So when you're fighting, you're trying to let go of your objectives, and an AI is a computer trying to emulate the way people think by pursuing a goal and an objective. So I think that those, when you put those two things, those two worlds together, those philosophical perspectives at the same time, it creates a contrast that actually helps us understand who we are as living beings in this world where non-living beings may turn to be alive very soon.
Yeah, it is. Well, of course, you've done quite a bit of research into this.
Yeah, there was years, like 8 years of research, kind of talking to a lot of scientists and brain scientists and computer scientists. It's like a lot of everything that is on the book on the science side is part of some kind of research from some university around the world, and I was trying to be as true to the scientific directions and the scientific state of the world as possible. So there's a lot of footnotes around the book. There is some that I saw from Michael Crichton, that when he wrote Jurassic Park and Prey, he puts those scientific notes so you can be constantly reminded those things are real. We are not just making stuff up. These can actually happen at any time. Hopefully not. Hopefully you're not going to have a dinosaur out by your door. Hopefully you're not going to get a nanobot invading your bloodstream and try to take over your brain. But these are possibilities. These are things that are being researched in some kind of secret lab around the world. Someone is doing tests with these things.
Yeah, they are. That's what's frightening. And for me, it's funny, you know, I get a lot of books, and I'm now very wary when I get a book. You know, I double check, triple check if the person is real.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to be, you know, fooled into liking a book. I don't know if I would like a book, but, you know, and interviewing some phony, you know, image. It's a frightening thing. I don't like it myself. I don't like it.
It's a strange world, right?
Yeah, it is.
You know, and especially if you think that someone may be doing that to you at some point, that will happen, or, you know, the people can cause all sorts of illusions. And the moment that those things get into your brain, which eventually they will, or they will try to do it, it becomes even more complicated. I think we are going through, there's two big technological leaps happening around us, and we have very little control over them. One is artificial intelligence. The other one are those brain implants and brain interfaces. They're happening, and separately they can transform the world. Together it can be a massive transformation that we can't even imagine what's going to happen. It's almost like, I think what we're living right now is the equivalent of when the first caveman realized they could put could catch the fire and on the end of a stick. Like, oh, that thing that kills entire forest, I can carry that with me on the stick. It's kind of warm, but he has no idea that he can cook his fish or he can melt rocks with it, and the implications that he's going to have 1,000 years from now, that he's going to be able to pile caves on top of each other and build the largest villages that he has ever imagined, that could even imagine. So I think we're living through that, but this book is not about that future. The book is about this first step into the abyss. All right, we are going to this. We're diving into this hurricane, and what should we expect?
Well, I tell you, the book is it's mind opening. That's for sure. And there's, you know, quite a bit of excitement and wonderful scenes. Are you hoping for a film be made out of this book?
I don't know. I wrote the story that I had in my head for all that much time, and there's fantasies that I had that since I was a kid that it kind of finally came to life. I think I can build this, and the technology is evolving to that point. So it was a very personal experience. I didn't know exactly what to expect. So I'm trying to be a little Taoist with this. I'm letting the universe play itself, and whatever the universe wants it to be, it will be. If it ends here as a book, it ends here as a book. If it becomes a TV or a movie or a TV series or a movie, great. But my part is done. I put the story, I downloaded the story from my head into the pages, and now everyone can read it and tell me if they like it or not.
Well, I think people will like it. It's a very enjoyable read, and as I said, you learn things, and with you, of course, you're also an ad agency executive, so you know how to go about promoting your book, right?
Yeah, you know, that's kind of one of the things I had in on my side, and I had all the tools to make it, to help people understand what it is and see if they get the best sense of what the story will be. You know, an interesting part of this is that I used, as part of my personal experiments, I used a lot of AI to create the ads for it. I used no AI on the book itself, but for the ads I used, because I wanted to have a sense of how it feels to be close to these artificial intelligences and how they think and how they operate. And it was a very eye-opening as well. Kind of a lot of it got me some insights into the beast that helped me finish the last draft of the book.
Well, hopefully, I don't think it will ever overtake a handsome Brazilian guy. So that I think you didn't have to worry about that. But definitely, it's a great read. And you have a website, a nice website you want people to visit?
Yeah, if they want to go to PJ Caldas, CALDAS. .com, and you know, there's a lot of information about the story, about the technology that the story is playing with, and there are links to buying different sources, different places, and contact information. I love talk to my readers, and you know, I'm very active on social media. So if anyone wants to go there, can read and share their thoughts, you know, I'm all ears.
Okay, well, I think it's a very interesting read, and I think people will enjoy reading about Tigris. And thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today, PJ Caldas. I think you've got a winner here. And this one took you 8 years, but always the second book doesn't take that long.
I hope so, too. No, thank you very much for having me.
Well, it's been a joy to talk to you. As I said, you can talk to me all day long.
All right.
Okay, good luck with the book.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye. Bye. All right. The Girl from Wudang, a novel about artificial intelligence, martial arts, and immortality. Well, I don't know about that, but I will say the book is fun to read. It's very thought-provoking, and I'm glad that it was written by a real person. And he did win an Emmy Award for his ad company, and so it's a fascinating read. And it is available wherever books are sold, what can I say? And I think you will enjoy it. I also want to say that I want to thank all of the listeners who have signed up for NaNoWriMo. I was so impressed, again, with some of the emails I got as the days are getting closer. And in a few days, everybody's going to be starting off writing their first book. And I think they will find the experience to be a joyful one, because you do really get proud of yourself. And my beautiful goddaughter, Kanisha, encouraged me a few years ago, before the pandemic, to join in the fun. And I did 50,000 words, and I did it in 25 days because I was making a big Thanksgiving then, and I didn't have time to do any writing after Thanksgiving. So anyway, it is a wonderful thing. You still have time to sign up. All you have to go to NaNoWriMo website and sign up and challenge yourself and become a writer. And you will find a lot of joy in that, a lot of fun. And it's great for your brain cells. You know, people talk about brain cells and the need for stimulation. And brain cells don't get stimulated by watching television, especially ones where you watch a rerun over and over and over and over. Your poor little brain stays little because it doesn't have any place to go. The minute you start doing something else, the brain cells light up with that little electron, whatever they have in them, and stay healthy and strong. So. Right, start writing a book. Anyway, I hope that you will, and let me know if you decide to join NaNoWriMo. I will invite some of the NaNoWriMo participants in the studio to talk to me about their experience and tell us how they did it and if it was worth it. And I think it will be interesting for all of us to find out. I know for me, it was lots of fun, a lot of fun. And again, I want to thank people who sent in questions for Bill Larson, who was here a few weeks ago, and he was talking about AI and about how they are scanning books from famous authors and having AI write books. And I don't like it. I think there should be a law against it, to tell you the truth. And certainly I hope that Amazon and Barnes & Noble and other online stores just do not allow them to do it, because it annoys me, and I hope that you won't participate in it, because I think that it's not right. You know, our minds, we have great minds, and all we have to do is give ourselves a little challenge and come out with something new and interesting. Okay. Anybody else have any questions for Bill Larson? Please send in the questions to patsy.radio@gmail, and I will tell him, and he will do some research and get back to us on both the trademark, which is also very important for authors who are writing a book that might have something physical in it that would require a trademark. And so Bill Larson will be happy to answer your questions on trademarks. And so send in those questions. I've been talking to a few authors who have ideas, and you go into this vicious circle. You have an idea for something great. You want to write about it, but you know if you write about it, somebody might steal it. I'm talking about something in your book, some physical object. In this case, one of our local authors has written a book, and he created this object, which I thought was very clever, and I hope that he will go ahead and actually produce it, and I think people would enjoy it. So I'm just, it's fascinating what can happen to a person when they start writing. You become also a creator of words, but also sometimes a creator of things, and that's always so exciting. Now, remember what I always tell you, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken in an audible book, or if you're very, very lucky, hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major film, streaming video, or perhaps a series on the Hallmark Channel. And you'll never know unless you start writing. Bye bye now.